Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. My name is Lauren Litton. I am the host of Spotlight on Youth, a radio show dedicated to social and legal trends impacting the rights and well-being of children across the country. Spotlight on Youth is a project of Children's Law Center, Inc., a not-for-profit children's rights legal services organization. The show is being streamed live over the Internet and will be available on demand after its conclusion. We encourage you to participate by asking our guests questions on air by dialing 347-994-1149. That's 347-994-1149. To indicate you have a question, you're going to press the number 1 on your telephone keypad, and you'll be placed in a queue to be on the air. Also, feel free to log into the chat room and pose questions there. On this episode, we are revisiting Ohio's Behavioral Health Juvenile Justice Initiative, which we featured several years ago after its initial 5-year evaluation. At the end of that episode, we said we needed another show about implementation, and so here we are. The Behavioral Health Juvenile Justice Initiative, which we will refer to as BHJJ, started as a pilot program in 3 local sites and now has expanded to 6 Ohio counties with a total of 2,545 youths between the ages of 10 and 18 having received services through the initiative. It is well documented that kids that become involved in the juvenile justice system frequently have experienced significant trauma and struggle with mental health, chemical dependency, and other behavioral health problems. BHJJ is intended to transform and expand the local system's options to better serve these youth by diverting kids from local and state correctional facilities into more comprehensive community-based mental and behavioral health treatment. The initiative is a funded partnership between the Ohio Departments of Youth Services and Mental Health and Addiction Services and the Begun Center for Violence Prevention Research and Education at Case Western Reserve University provides research and evaluation services for the program. Communities that implement BHJJ utilize a host of evidence-based practices and rely on collaborative partnerships to foster better outcomes for kids with these complex and multifaceted issues. All 3 of our guests today are from Cuyahoga County, Ohio, which is Cleveland for those not familiar with Ohio, although they each work in a very different capacity related to today's topic. Joining us are Melanie Miller, who is the Behavioral Health Juvenile Justice Manager for the Juvenile Division of the Cuyahoga County Court of Common Pleas. Melanie has worked within the hallowed halls of juvenile court since 2003, holding various positions since that time, including serving as a probation officer, a placement aftercare coordinator, and a probation systems navigator. Catherine Castell-Smith works as a substance abuse treatment supervisor and the integrated co-occurring treatment supervisor at Belfair JCB. Kate is well-versed in the provision of intensive in-home individual and family therapy, particularly with respect to co-occurring disorders, and she conducts relevant assessments to determine appropriate diagnoses and treatment protocols. Dr. Jeff Kretschmar is a research assistant professor at the Jack Joseph and Morton Mandel School of Applied Social Sciences at Case Western Reserve University and a senior research associate of the Begun Center for Violence Prevention Research and Education. Jeff works on a wide array of evaluation research studies, including serving as a principal investigator for BHJJ. So welcome, everybody, to the show. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Hi. Hi. All right. You're on. It's time. So, Jeff, you were on the show 2 years ago when your initial 5-year evaluation was published, and I would encourage our audience to listen to that show for all details about BHJJ and the evaluation. But for those who are not familiar with BHJJ, can we do a quick recap? Maybe explain what's the problem that BHJJ is trying to address and some of the practices involved.
Sure. BHJJ is a diversion program for juvenile justice-involved youth between the ages of 10 and 18 who also suffer from mental or behavioral health issues. So in lieu of detention, youth are diverted into mostly community-based and evidence-based behavioral health treatment instead of formal processing through the juvenile justice system, either locally or through our state facilities, which is the Ohio Department of Youth Services. So it's really about trying to take kids who may benefit more from community-based behavioral health treatment and get them in there instead of placing them in either local detention or in state-run facilities.
And I think just as like a way of background for people who are not treatment providers, the terminology, like behavioral health, what does that encompass? What does that mean?
So when I say behavioral health, I'm speaking of either having issues with mental health diagnoses, mental health concerns, or alcohol and drug concerns, so alcohol abuse and dependence or dependence or abuse of drugs.
Melanie and Kate, how did you become involved in BHJJ?
I'll go ahead. This is Melanie. For me, I actually have been with the project since the beginning in 2005. And just as you had stated earlier, I've had various roles at the court. And I'm actually one of the original placement aftercare coordinators and actually carried a caseload of BHJJ youth when we first started implementing the program. At that time, we actually served only females in the program, and they were actually substance abuse and mental health diagnosis. And from there, I went on to be the probation systems navigator, where I continued to have involvement as the gatekeeper for referrals to the program, attending monthly BHJJ meetings. And currently, my role is the BHJJ manager, so I oversee the program for the court. So just over the years, I've had various roles, and I've been in it from the very beginning, since 2005.
Hey, I initially started approximately 3 years ago. I was initially just a therapist, not just, but I was a therapist working with the BHJJ population. My clients had the drug and alcohol diagnoses and the mental health issues as well. And then I have transitioned into the supervisor of the program from there, and I'm currently the supervisor of the program. And what I liked best about it was I felt it was very engaging. I felt supported by the team and by, you know, my supervisor at the time, addressing the clinical issues that needed to be addressed by these kids. I was used to working with the residential population of clients, which many of these kids, you know, their behaviors have escalated to the point where they're at threat for being, you know, placed in an institution of some sort. And I liked being able to have that team approach to be able to address the issues with the family and with the systems to prevent that from happening. So I'm glad that I'm now able to supervise this population.
And Kate, just maybe so that people have a better understanding of where you work, can you give some information about that? Great.
Sure. Sorry. I work for Belfair, which is a child and adolescent mental health agency. It's a very large agency, and we have many different programs, such as, you know, school counseling. We have outpatient counseling. We have the in-home program, which is where I'm working. We also have a residential facility, and we have a large Monarch, which works with the autistic population.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I do the in-home piece, and so that's where BHJJ follows under the in-home program.
Mm-hmm. And Melanie, from your perspective of the court, what interests the court about such an initiative or an effort? You know, what wasn't working before that, what were you seeing from a court perspective?
From the court perspective, we were seeing the kids that are now in our program, we were seeing this population was either in our, as Jeff had mentioned, Ohio Department of Youth Services, or being put into maybe private placements, but they were, you know, getting deeper into the system, and we were, at that time before BHJJ, we were just treating them with traditional probation services. The unique part about this program, too, and what interested me was just seeing the success of the program, and I think the importance of just really, like what Kate was saying, the team building, and then also to the partnering with the agencies and to just the success that's come out of this program, because those kids that prior to BHJJ that may have ended up, you know, in a facility, in a youth, jail type of setting are now being able to be successfully treated in the community.
Mm-hmm. So what? How does this work in Cuyahoga County? Because that's, I know, the county that at least you, Melanie, and Kate can speak
mm-hmm.
to. What are the practices that you use? How do the kids move through the system and obtain these services?
Sure. And I'm going to go first, and I'll just have Kate can kind of piggyback off of me.
Okay.
The youth that come into the BHJJ program, all of the youth must be on probation. And our referrals are actually made by probation officers and can come from the jurist. Typically, the kids are it's the type of kid who hasn't been successful on probation and need a higher level of care or supervision. From there, it goes to, we actually have a whole BHJJ unit that consists of a placement aftercare coordinator, which we have three of them, which would be similar to having an intensive probation officer. And then we have two care coordinators and an assessor. Our assessor would meet with the family, go over the social history, their juvenile history, completes a behavioral health substance abuse assessment, and if she deems them being appropriate for the program, then they're assigned to a placement aftercare coordinator and also a care coordinator, which is kind of unique for our court because we're the only unit that actually has a team approach, that we actually have like a PO and a case manager working together on a case. And from that point, we set up team meetings. We develop a probation plan, a treatment plan are developed. And usually at that point, we're talking about what type of service that we want to put in. And usually it's Kate's program with intensive co-occurring treatment, or ICT, or MST, which would be multisystemic therapy. And at that point, I'm going to kind of kick it over to Kate for to kind of fill in regarding ICT, because they're our number one source for treatment, and we usually work in tandem with them.
Sure. So the ICT program, which is the integrated co-occurring treatment program that we have at Belfair, is a very intensive program. We meet with the kids for 3 to 4 hours a week. And the program really focuses on, collaborating with the team, identifying, agreeing upon goals and methods and the resources to use with the client and their family. So once they come to us, it gets assigned to one of my two specifically ICT-trained therapists. And so then they would then contact the family, contact the probation officers and the care coordinators just to gather some additional information that they may need, and also to help match the intensity level of interventions that, the clients and their families are willing to do in order, to make the changes and to identify, really where this family's at and what changes need to be made and where they're willing to make those changes. It really focuses on, addressing solutions to the home environment and the school environment, also the community because probation is involved, and to learn the priority of issues for treatment. So obviously these kids come with very complex issues, and so we like to be able to focus on specifically what issues need to be addressed at that moment to get them to a point where they can function in society. And we like to identify any of the challenges and barriers to making those changes. And also how we do that is both of my therapists have weekly supervision with me, clinical supervision, and we also have weekly consultation with our consultant from Case Western Reserve, which sometimes the care coordinators attend and the probation officers will attend, just so that we really can keep that team approach in addressing every area of this kid's life so we can support the team members and we can also support the families. Interventions can be either client-specific, they can be family-specific, or they can be, a team approach. One of our interventions can be working with the team and having probation on board to help us, address whatever the issue is. If it's school, we'll all go to the school and we'll all meet with the school in order to address the issue that's going on at school. So there's a lot of flexibility as far as who can be involved, and we really try to have all the systems involved so that we can have a very comprehensive approach to addressing these kids' issues.
Okay. We've got some questions coming in, but before we sort of leave this about how it works, Jeff, there's you've been involved in an evaluation of 5 other counties in Ohio. So I'm wondering if there's anything you want to share about some of the differences in approaches or implementation that you think is important to highlight on how this can look differently.
Sure. Well, as Melanie said, the front door to BHJJ is most often through the juvenile court. But from there, the projects in the various counties differ, sometimes pretty significantly. So not the BHJJ does not require a county to use a certain evidence-based practice in their treatment. So they leave that decision up to the county to decide what evidence-based practice or practices are best and a best fit for their community. So across the state, we've had, since the project started in 2005, there's been, I think, we're up to 16 counties who have participated for at least a few years in BHJJ. Recently, the program, it was in 6 counties until recently. There was additional dollars earmarked for BHJJ and for BHJJ expansion. So we recently added 4 new project sites that comprise 6 counties. So Lorain is a new county. We have Wood County coming on board. Wayne and Holmes County and Trumbull and Mahoning County. They're all on board now. So we're currently up to 10 projects with BHJJ. All of those projects are doing BHJJ differently. They're using different evidence-based practices. So, for example, in Cuyahoga County, while ICT is used, integrated co-occurring treatment, there are also other practices that can be used, such as multisystemic family therapy. In Dayton, Ohio, they're using what's called functional family therapy. There are there's a menu from which counties can choose their evidence-based practice, which makes it really portable. So BHJJ can go into a community. It doesn't dictate how it has to look. So if you're a county who's thinking of doing something like this, you don't have to be already using ICT or MST or FFT. I mean, you can say, we're using this. We've found it to be a really good program for the population we want to serve, and we'd like to use it. And as long as it's either evidence-based or a promising practice, you're able to use that. So one of the big differences among the counties participating is the kinds of treatment services they offer. There are also differences with respect to the population being served. So, for example, as Melanie said, Cuyahoga County in 2005 through about 2008, I think, served only female offenders. Now they are both male and female offenders being served in the program. In Summit County, which is Akron, Ohio, they are choosing to focus only on or mostly on felony-level offenders, which other counties don't do. Some counties go younger or go less severe in terms of previous juvenile justice involvement. So it's real, and I say portable all the time because it really can be adapted to the kids and families your community is seeing and serving.
Well, some of the questions that have come in, now it's been said twice that Cuyahoga County started just with this approach with females, with girls. And so one of the questions is why?
Yeah, and I can answer that. When Ohio Department of Youth Service and the Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services restarted BHJJ in 2005, part of the request for proposals that they put out was an interest in focusing on female offender because so little was known about the services needed for female offenders. Most of the programs up to that point and a lot of the research that had been done on diversion programs in general was focused on boys because that's the population that, especially in our state-run facility, they're mostly boys. So I think Ohio wanted to know more about how best to treat and divert females who are involved in the juvenile justice system. So in that first round of funding in 2005, Cuyahoga chose to focus on the female offender, Montgomery County, which is Dayton, Ohio, and I believe Fairfield County, which is one of the smaller counties that participated, their focus was on the female offender as well.
Melanie, is there anything you want to add to that?
No, I concur with what Jeff's saying. I think, you know, at that time, you know, that really there's a lot more services, I think, for males versus females. And, you know, that clientele, I remember kind of going back to one of the questions you had asked earlier was, you know, working with that population back in 2005 and the females, you know, was just how, you know, different and difficult, you know, and just the lack of services at that time and just what a need there was for the girls. And, you know, we had a lot of success with them at the beginning of the program.
And I think as a field, we've come to really understand that, especially with the female population, about the high levels of trauma that they've experienced, too, and how to meet those specific needs has been an issue.
Correct.
Yeah. So I think it's time to start actually explaining how it works with stories, because that's some of the questions as well, and then we'll get to sort of the big impact of it. Because, Kate, you talked about, like, you know, we'll do an intervention, we'll go to the schools, and all of you, you've really talked about a team approach. I heard team approach within the court system. There's a team approach among those who are working with the family in a treatment setting, and then there's even a team approach with the family. So if you can explain, you know, what does that look like? How do you foster that? And then I'd like to hear, I'll just stop there, and I'll get to my next question about what the specific treatments look like, too. People are asking about that. Because you can use all of the, you know, these acronyms, and me from, like, the legal world, I don't know what that really means. So to sort of explain, you know, start with some of the team approach and what some of these interventions can look like with even involving the family.
Do you want me to go first, Melanie?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So I guess when it comes to, like, what the interventions look like, I mean, you know, working with these families and working with the team approach is, I'm trying to think of a case that we have currently. These kids come with, as I said before, so much trauma and so many destructive behaviors that I think the families get to a point where they're overwhelmed. And often a struggle is, you know, just getting in the door and just trying to give support and give the family hope, you know, that their kids can make some changes and can, you know, get better, for lack of a better word. And so I think what we've done with the specific family that I'm thinking of is the team all came together to work with this grandmother, because the grandmother is the one who is currently raising this young lady. And her behaviors have been so aggressive and so destructive that being able to sit down with grandma and seeing that everybody is there at the table and is willing to support them, and we have team meetings on this with grandma. She comes to all of the team meetings, and everyone else that could be a natural support for this client comes to these meetings, and we all sit down and we really talk about what's going on, and we make plans as far as who's going to contact the school to make the changes, who's going to do the safety plan with grandma. I mean, it could be as simple as just my therapist going out to the house with the care coordinator and going through the house and developing safety plans so that grandma feels a little bit safer in her home, and so that we can address that issue right off the bat. Am I missing anything, Melanie? I'm trying to think.
No, and just kind of going off of what you're saying, I think, you know, back to the team approach, this case is probably one of the most challenging cases I think we've had, and Kate and I have actually, you know, worked the cases as therapists and as POs, and, you know, just as supervisors also. But the team, when we say, like, the team approach, the care coordinator, the probation officer, the therapist, there's several other agencies are involved, and just, you know, the open line of communication and going out there together, and just the time and effort that has been put into this. And really, this case is almost like a textbook for, you know, just using the wraparound model. And as Kate had said, too, I mean, pretty severe, a long history of abuse, neglect, trauma, substance abuse, mental health, some developmental disabilities, and, you know, coming first time to the court, and, you know, she's 17 years old. So, you know, we've only had this case, you know, a short amount of time. But just seeing, too, the amount of teamwork that's been put into this so far, you know, we've come so far on this case. You're getting the youth placed into a new school, appropriate services, support to the family, bringing in natural support. You know, I think this is going to be a case that we'll remember for a long time.
Definitely. And even, I mean, the magistrates are on board, too. And I think that that's a really important component to being successful in this program is that this individual picked up a new assault charge. And so instead of being thrown, you know, in the DH or instead of being thrown and automatically sent to another facility, you know, the probation officers and the care coordinators and the therapists are able to go to court and talk with the magistrate and say, this is, you know, these are the things that we're trying to do to put in place, you know, to keep this kid safe and to keep the community safe and address the very complex issues that she has. And then, you know, because the magistrates are familiar with BHJJ and they're familiar with the team, because the teams, you know, are very close, they're small teams, so they get to know everybody within the systems, that instead of being, I guess, more reactive and putting a kid in a detention center, she's able to go home and we're able to work with her in the community.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like a lot of trust has been developed. You know, you talked about the magistrates are on board. You've got community-based organizations and the court. How did that trust develop? Can you give examples of maybe where a team may have not agreed and how you worked through that? And it sounds like information sharing probably was something that had to really be worked out to protocols.
Yeah. I can take a stab at this initially. Mm-hmm. And you're right that you know, I've been to a lot of BHJJ meetings around the state of Ohio. So for all, just about all those 16 counties that have participated, I've been there. And it's very evident once you start going to those meetings which sites are going to be the most successful. And it's a large part of that is the teamwork and collaboration of the key stakeholders and partners that you bring to the table. So while there's a team approach to the treatment, which is, I think, extremely important, we have every 2 months, we have a meeting at the Cuyahoga County Mental Health and Alcohol and Drug Board to talk about BHJJ. How is it going? What are the problems going on? And that's a great place to share this information. So it's not necessarily a treatment team meeting talking about specific cases, but about the project in general and how it's running. So we have representatives from the Drug and Alcohol Mental Health Board. We have the providers, treatment providers there. So anyone providing treatment to the kids and families attend. We have representatives from our state departments who fund the program. So the Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services have representatives there, as well as the Ohio Department of Youth Services. We have a care coordination group represented, juvenile court is there, and myself. So we get together every 2 months and talk through the issues. And there are issues sometimes that come up. And getting together regularly to discuss those and having the trust of being, you know, this is almost, they're going on 10 years of BHJJ in Cuyahoga County. And having some of the same people at the table for a lot of that time, and developing that trust within the group that no matter what the decision is, the decision is going to be made what's best for the youth and the family. So I think those meetings and the team that they've put together really do facilitate the trust and the belief that Cuyahoga County and the team that has been put together is really doing a great job in getting this done.
Yeah, and I agree with that, Jeff, 100%. And I think, too, when you talk about the trust and even, like, the trust on the courts and with the jurists, that the program has been around for a long time, that they've seen success with the program. My team is a veteran team, and they're familiar with them. But also, too, recently Jeff came out to the court and presented the data collection for the program. And you can see the data shows this is a successful program. So I think that's been really helpful for our jurists and, just families, other systems with gaining the trust of the program.
Well, talking about success, and then I will get back to, let's walk through what some of this looks like. What do we mean by success? So what really has, what's been the impact of BHJJ? Maybe Jeff, start with some of the larger findings, and then I really want to hear from Melanie and Kate about their personal experiences and what they're seeing on the ground.
Sure. Well, the newest report was recently released, I think in February, that covers all the data from 2006 to 2000 and the middle of 2013. And in that time, there were over 2,500 kids who have been enrolled in the BHJJ program since 2006. Many of them are coming in with multiple diagnoses, mental health and substance abuse diagnoses, and many of them have both mental health and substance abuse diagnoses, which makes their cases that much more complex and challenging. There's, as you said earlier, there's lots of trauma, especially with the girls. And many of them, the majority of them, when you look at their risk level to reoffend, which is measured by a risk assessment, they're moderate to high risk to reoffend. So these are kids who are challenging. And many of them have been through treatments before. Their families have been through treatments before. And sometimes, in some places, BHJJ is the last resort. It's the last thing that they're going to try before they're just fed up. So my job is to evaluate the success of the program and tell the story of how it's doing and how all the counties are doing. So overall, we're seeing really great results across the board on many measures that we examine. So there are educational outcomes that we collect that show kids are more engaged in school, kids are going to school more often, getting better grades if they participate in the program, and especially if they are successfully participating in the program. We have significant reductions in trauma symptoms from the beginning to the end of treatment, which is really it's really a result of the great treatment that's offered by all these projects. We have additional mental health outcomes that show that kids have much fewer problems, daily functioning problems at termination as compared to intake. We have some significant substance use reductions. And I will say that Cuyahoga County, because of the youth they're serving, most of the kids who are being served in Cuyahoga County have substance abuse issues, and some very significant substance abuse issues. And they've done a really great job of addressing those and reducing those. When we look at recidivism, which is what some people like to focus on in projects like this and diversion programs like this, the kids are not committing many crimes while they're in the program or even after the program. So the recidivism numbers look very good, which is important because this gets back to the trust issue that sometimes jurists might be taking a gamble having a program like this in their court, because if they decide that they're going to assign a child to diversion instead of, for example, locking them up somewhere, and that child goes out and does something horrific, and now their name's in the paper, and they should have been in locked up, and why were they on diversion? I mean, it could be a gamble, and it's something that our reports, I think, have alleviated for some of the jurists to make that decision, because they do see such good results. They're not putting the community at risk by letting these kids stay in the community and get treatment. They're not committing many crimes. And if you look at one of the most impressive numbers, I think, in the whole report, and really why a large part of why the program was started, was to reduce the numbers of kids who were placed in state-run facilities. I mean, that's really what especially the Ohio Department of Youth Services was interested in. I mean, they're interested in not having more kids in there than they need to have in there. And so of all the kids who have participated in BHJJ, only about 3.5%. So it's 82 kids out of 2,336 kids. At any point after they were enrolled in BHJJ, went on to be sent to an Ohio Department of Youth Service facility. So 96.5% of the kids who participated did not appear in one of those state-run facilities.
Thank you. Melanie and Kate, what are
sure,
you thinking with?
Oh, go ahead, Melanie.
You know, what I've seen just over, you know, one of the things with the success of the program was to, you know, the program, you know, continues to be funded. It's been able to grow, you know, since 2005 when, you know, we just had the 20 girls to now we have our own unit and, you know, where we have placement aftercare coordinators, case managers, an assessor, and myself. You know, that speaks volumes to how successful this program is and just the impact on the court that we, you know, that they've, you know, put in, you know, the dollars and the time to actually have a whole separate unit is really important. I think even now, this has only been for the past year that we've put the unit together, and I think even that impact from this, as Kate had mentioned too, we work with her team with weekly meetings, coming out to work with them, and just the impact we're having right now, we're definitely reduced our out-of-home placements significantly. And this fiscal year, we haven't had any commitments to the Ohio Department of Youth Services. So I think for me in the court, the success of this, I think it really shows the impact of how important this program is overall.
Right. Yeah, I agree with Melanie and Jeff. We've gone from one full-time therapist initially to two full-time therapists right now that are just dedicated to the BHJJ program, which I think is great. We've seen a reduction in the use of our youth. I'd say the majority of them are testing negative with their drug screens upon discharge. We've seen a reduction in the aggressive behaviors, reduction in the trauma symptoms, same things that Jeff was saying, for the majority of our kids that actively participate in the program. We've also seen many of the kids whose parents have said, I guess one of the big things for me is, you know, when my kid's 18, he's out of the house. That's often a threat that we hear. And I would say upon discharge, you know, the majority of our families are willing to continue to work with their kids and are willing to continue, you know, to let them live in the home and, you know, are – which just inevitably makes them more successful in the end.
So turning to, you know, you're talking, again, all three of you, it's successful. Why does BHJJ work? And maybe now it's like, how does it work? You can kind of answer that question either or both ways. So kind of walk us through it, why it works, but also from your perspective, why is this different and why does it work?
Sure. I'll go ahead and go. For me, for the court perspective would be, one, it provides a team approach with professional and natural support. I think, two, the parents and the parents and the families feel supported in terms of how we approach, and then also, to the contact standards that we provide. Because also, too, with the program, as Kate had mentioned, you know, her therapists are in the home twice a week. Our probation officers and care coordinators are in the home on a weekly basis also. So I think they're seeing we're more visible. We're interacting with them. We're coming to the home versus them coming just to an office. The team focuses on the strengths of the youth and the family. The team's able to carry smaller caseloads. And then also, too, again, I mean, the team approach even, you know, the other providers that we work with, we all have a really good working relationship. And my team specifically, we're all housed in one wing of our building. We're able to see each other every day, communicate, and it really doesn't feel like that we have a disconnect between any other systems. So I think that's really for the course perspective, what really works for the team, and again, that we have the jurists on, you know, that are supportive of the program.
Mm-hmm. And I think from the providers, you know, just to piggyback, Melanie covered a lot of it. I think that we find that it's a very effective way to address the clients and the family's needs. Again, like there isn't that disconnect between the systems that we find, you know, in some of the other programs. And so therefore the interventions that we use can be more effective because they're more immediate, and we can also build in, you know, consequences can be built in as a form of like a therapeutic approach. Again, everyone, it's a really small team, so I think everyone is vested in helping each other, and everyone is invested in, you know, doing what's best for these kids and these families as a whole. And it also allows us to hold not only the other providers accountable, but to hold the families accountable, too, to making these changes, because, I mean, there's somebody there at the house, you know, almost every day or a couple times a week to make sure that, you know, these changes are being made that need to be made. So, yeah, I think it's good.
Yeah, I would add that a few things. One, I think part of why BHJJ works is because mental health treatment delivered with fidelity works, and that's what's going on here. We have evidence-based practices being used that monitor how well the programs are operating with fidelity and how well they stick to how they are supposed to be running the program. So that is monitored. And I think also we have a very significant partner in our state, which is the Ohio Department of Youth Services and Mental Health and Addiction Services, and they've been involved from the beginning, and provide funds to afford to be able to do projects like BHJJ. So their contribution and their partnership has been there from the beginning, and their guidance really on how to do this. So to their credit, they recognized the importance of diversion and wanted to roll it out to the communities.
Kate, maybe you can give us some more specifics about the integrated co-occurring treatment model.
Okay.
So I understand, you know, there's different kinds of evidence-based approaches that can be used under BHJJ, but this is the one that you work with, I think it sounds like, most frequently. And you're talking about, you know, making sure families implement changes. So what are you actually doing?
Okay. So the therapist, the therapists go into the homes. And obviously, like I said, they work with the families 3 to 4 hours a week. And okay, so they'll present a case. They'll identify what the issues are with that family, whether the kid has trauma or the kid is, they all have to be abusing substances and have a mental health diagnosis. So whatever that the client's individual issues are, they identify what would be the best form of intervention to utilize with them. So for a kid who has trauma, you know, all of our staff, or the two therapists, are trained in, you know, trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy. So they could utilize those forms of intervention with the kids and help educate the family as to maybe why their child is reacting the way that their child is acting and what they can do to help them, you know, manage the symptoms associated with their trauma, whether the client is running away, you know, developing safety plans and crisis plans to help prevent that from happening. We also, I don't know if I mentioned earlier, we have a therapist who's on call 24/7. So the families always have access to a therapist to help them process during a crisis situation, which we have found to be very helpful in reducing the negative consequences of, you know, crises that could happen. So that's one thing they do. We also, they're trained in motivational interviewing. So it really puts the responsibility on the client and the families to make those changes and to identify the changes that they want to make. I think often we get caught up in identifying the changes that we all want families to make. So our approach is to go in and identify with them what needs to happen. So if a mom says, I need him to stop being disrespectful, I need them to stop punching holes in the wall, that would be, you know, their goal. And also working with the courts to see what needs to happen in order to make sure that they do well. So there's a lot of flexibility within the ICT model as far as what specific interventions can be used. So when they come to consultation, they'll process the case, they'll discuss the case, and then we will identify, you know, what's the next step. So, for example, a family, we have a client who the child is living in a different home than where the parents are due to the conflict. It's voluntary. The parents agreed to do that. So my therapist will go in, and we identify that she needs to sit down with both of the parents and find out, like, you know, what are the negotiables? Like, what's really going on at this house that people aren't talking about? Or what can we do to change within the home in a short amount of time, within the next week? What can we do in the next week to help get this client at least home? So both parents have their input, and they're both saying they make a plan. So they're willing to do, they're willing to let the client come home and, you know, for the weekend. So then they do that. Processing with the clients as to, you know, where their losses are. Many of our kids have losses, not only the trauma, but there's many losses just because of the demographic population that we work with. And so being able to identify, you know, processing that loss and going through that grief and using cognitive behavioral therapy, solution-focused therapy, family systems therapy is obviously really big with us, is working with the families to get everybody on board. Is that specific enough?
Oh, that's more? Terrific. Thank you. You know, we have a lot of listeners that are from the legal community who represent parents or kids. Is there anything you want to say to them or recommend? Are they involved in any of this, or how can they advocate for this type of approach in their communities, even if there's not a formal initiative?
You know, like on our end right now, we have a lot of our kids will have guardian ad litems or attorneys that are familiar with the program, mm-hmm. and can advocate for a youth that maybe the probation officer working on the case, you know, wasn't even thinking about BHJJ, that they, you know, have worked on previous cases, and they say, you know, why don't we look at having this kid be referred to this program? So I know we do get, again, like guardian ad litems, attorneys, maybe the jurist, you know, that will bring, a kid to the attention of BHJJ. I don't know if that's specific enough for you.
Okay. Jeff, I think BHJJ, I mean, this is an Ohio initiative, but I know you've been involved in evaluations of evidence-based practices that are used under this in other states as well. Are there any kind of lessons learned or advice you have from communities based on all of that work about how to implement similar initiatives or programs in their communities?
Yeah. It's funny because I get called a lot from folks in other states who have heard somehow about BHJJ and what's going on in Ohio. I think the two most recent...
Right from our radio show.
Maybe, from the radio show.
Yeah, right.
I think the two most recent were from Chicago and from Texas, who they're both wanting to do something around diversion and heard about BHJJ. So I always tell folks that, you know, one of the most important things is to have a very, very good group of key stakeholders at the table. So you want to think about all the areas that this project can touch and get people on board from those areas. So you need treatment providers, and you need the court. I mean, you need the court first. If the court doesn't want to do something like this, then you're going to have a really hard time getting something like this off the ground, because they will just not refer kids to the program. So you have to have the court on board, the judge or magistrates on board. You have to talk with your treatment providers, and you have to talk with your mental health board and drug and alcohol board. That's key. Because if you don't have that support, it's going to be a real challenge for you to do something like this, because inevitably you're going to need their help on something.
Absolutely.
And if they're not on board with this, then you just might not get it. So that's first. Then, which is equally important, you got to think about how you're going to fund this. And you might not have to come up with a lot of extra money. You just might have to maybe move some money around or be more creative with blending funds together, because most of the people and all of the people at the table in this team, these kids are part of all of our systems. So when we talk about who pays for this, if there's no dedicated grant funding or no dedicated line item in a budget, then you need the folks who can make those decisions in their agencies to come together and think about how do we do something like this. It works. We know it works. It's going to save us money in the long run. We know that. It will. So how do we pay for it up front? I mean, and those are real important conversations to have right away before you get too much into the weeds about how planning and selecting treatment providers and the referral process. Working those things out is really critical. And there's a lot of groups around the country who know about diversion and know about diversion programming. There's a lot of work done with the Models for Change, the MacArthur Models for Change program, and the agencies and groups associated with that. There's a lot of great resources out there that you can look at and will help you decide if this is right for your community and how to do it.
Melanie or Kate, from a treatment provider's or a court-specific perspective, recommendations you want to give to your peers out there who may be thinking about incorporating some of these type of behavioral treatment models?
I guess one of the advices that I would suggest, you know, if someone's interested in using BHJJ or they're thinking about implementing it, is one, you know, it's proven to be effective in reducing recidivism, you know, keeping children and families together in the home, in the community, and also to just, you know, just the cost effectiveness of the program. I know Jeff, when he did our data collection, really comparing the annual cost of housing an offender, you know, for us, for our Ohio Department of Youth Services, versus the cost of BHJJ is huge. And, I mean, that's one of the things I think just, you know, when you're looking at possibly considering this, those are some things to consider.
Yeah, and from a provider's perspective, I think that BHJJ is really helpful in being supportive to the intensive in-home program. So we're very successful because we have the support of everyone and the whole entire team. And I think that the therapists feel that they can be more effective in addressing the issues because of the small group and the team and the support that they get from the whole BHJJ team and all the systems that are involved. So I think that it just allows the therapist to be able to be more, more effective. I think I said that twice now. So, yeah, I just think it's, from the provider's perspective, it's a really great program.
So, you know, I hear the three of you are very supportive of this and you've seen great results. Are there still challenges that remain that you're working through?
I mean, I think there's challenges every day with the population that we serve, since, you know, these kids are, you know, they have severe behaviors, mental health issues, substance abuse issues. We have kids that we're working with, you know, they've been hospitalized, serious charges, risky behavior, you know, and also, too, the challenges. When families get to us, they're usually overwhelmed, exhausted. We sometimes hear, you know what, I'm done. Just lock them up. Can they be placed outside the home? And I think that's an ongoing challenge for us, you know, working with the families. I do think, you know, as we build up trust with them and they see that the services are working, we're able to work through those things. But I think that's one of the biggest challenges for us right now. And also, too, the kids, you know, because we are reducing the numbers of, you know, the kids that are in, for us, you know, our Ohio Department of Youth Services facilities and other residential settings, you know, that kids, you know, we're really focusing on community-based services. So we are working, you know, with a more difficult population. Also, too, a lot of different drugs that have changed over the years. You know, we're getting kids now that are, you know, with heroin and different things like that. So it is. It's a challenge, but I think, we're working on it every day. We can continue to communicate, and we also look at, you know, like what Jeff was saying with our evidence-based practices, you know, what's being effective and what's working for the families.
Yeah, no, I agree with Melanie. I think she covered it really well.
I think from there's a few things from my perspective. One is sustainability. It's always a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So we're lucky to have the support of the state of Ohio who fund this, largely fund this. And we hope that they continue to do that. But if they didn't, how do we sustain this? You know, there are jobs paid for out of the grant. So how can we sustain something like this? It's always an issue that we're dealing with around projects like this. I think it's also important as people come and go out of various agencies and courts to continually educate them about BHAJ. So if there's a new judge, for example, and if maybe your community has one juvenile court judge, if that judge changes, educating him or her around what BHAJ is and how it can work so that we don't just assume that they know and that we assume that they're going to start sending kids into the program because they may not, just because they don't know what it is. So that continual education around between the courts and the treatment providers, the mental health board, that's important as well. And always thinking about how better to serve the kids, even though program's working great. Are there other ways and more ways and better ways that we can serve these kids and families?
You know, Jeff, too, you bring up – that's a really good point because I know on – like for my role at the court, too, we have 6 judges and, you know, several magistrates. So going around and also speaking with them periodically, program, giving updates about the programs, going out to the different probation departments because, you know, people do. They come and go, letting them know about the program, the successes, what we're providing, and even getting out to the different agencies and talking about the program. But, you know, as you said, it's constant networking, getting out, talking about the program, and on a continuous basis.
Well, we're at final thoughts. I do want to let our listeners know there's a lot of information about BHAJ on Children's Law's website, which is childrenslawky.org. Last time you were on, Jeff, you know, you had said your hopes, it says now we're 2 years later, that you wanted this to become part of everyday practice. So what are your final thoughts and hopes from each of you?
Well, I guess I'll start. We have expanded, BHAJ has expanded into additional counties and projects. So I hope it continues to do that. And I think with all the good work going on and our ability to showcase that with an evaluation, that more of it will be done. And the tide is clearly turning nationwide in terms of the recognition that diversion is a generally very safe and more effective option for these kids than a juvenile justice facility. So that's 2 years later, I'm still hoping that there's even more diversion than there is right now.
Yeah, I guess on my perspective, it would just be, you know, piggybacking off of Jeff would be, you know, the data has shown that it's a successful program in preventing youth from going deeper into the juvenile system and helping prevent out-of-home placements. And just seeing, since being involved in 2005, just seeing it grow over the years and hopefully, you know, continuing to grow, you know, that we were able to actually have our own unit. And I would love to, you know, my next goal would be to get another care coordinator on my team. So just continuing to see it expand.
Yeah, I agree with Jeff and with Melanie. From our therapeutic perspective, it's been very effective, and I hope that we get to continue to work, you know, with probation and with CASE to address, you know, more issues of the kids in Cuyahoga County because there's a lot. So I hope we get
Well,
that.
Thank you, Kate, Jeff, and Melanie, for sharing your stories and perspectives and your knowledge with us today. It's been wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Lauren.
Thank you.
Our next show will focus on reentry and community-based practices to assist kids who are returning to their communities after being sentenced to a state correctional facility. So to stay informed about that or other upcoming shows, you can follow us here at Blog Talk Radio or visit the Children's Law Center's website. Take care and see you next time on Spotlight on Youth.